Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, for a full hour that just might change your life. Or change some aspect of it. Or it might change your underwear or change your mind. Oh my goodness. Change is wonderful. Let's go places together that we didn't think we could get into. Like an abandoned mall.
Break the chains.
Here's the story of a prince and a baker. A prince and a baker. They were neighbors, but of different social classes. The prince made nothing, but the baker made pies. And his pies were good, and they brought joy to everyone. And everyone knew of his pies. So this is the story of the baker and the prince, and their proximity and inequality, and how that affects joy. Here comes the baker.
I am the baker. Hello, I bake pies. And I bake pies that are good and everyone likes them. And that's swell, because I like making pies as well. And so they come and buy my pies. And I try to make them all good. And I try to make them with fresh and good ingredients. To me, that's the most important thing. And they say, you know, love is what goes. I think love is the care that comes from selecting good and fresh ingredients and using them. I'm the baker, and I gotta say that the joys in life sometimes are simple, like pie. Sometimes it's no more than that. That's what you need, is something made with care that will give you true delight. I am the baker. Oh, here comes the prince. I better go for now.
I am the prince. I have come to your tiny little town in search of joy. I heard tell of a baker who makes a pie with no equal. A nonpareil. Is that the word I want? There is no better pie. And he is the best at what he does. And I understand that the key is the ingredients. Just a lot of care goes into it. A lot of thought. That's mainly what he thinks about. Is how am I going to take these ingredients, assemble them, using my secrets, all the things I've learned, putting the hard work and care into it, and then making something that's transcendent, that people cannot necessarily give to themselves. One of those things that requires another person. And I require someone who can make pies, because that is not my forte. I have many fortes. Is that the plural? Those are strengths. My castle is fortified. I am a fortress. I have fortitude. And now I've come for pie. Oh, baker.
Yes, Prince, is that you? I am humbled by your presence. May I get you a pie?
Of course. What's the best pie that you have made today?
I have made a pie with the rarest of peaches. They are peaches that come from Fukushima province. They're very hard to get. Not the unsafe part. Farther west.
Ah, I see.
And they are very sweet and rare, and they don't travel well. So the fact that I was able to get these Fukushima peaches and make this pie, this is really something
special. I spared no expense. I spared no hardship. And it's made with extra love, because I know that you represent our culture. Yes. All right. Give me the pie. Here you go. That's a fantastic looking pie.
Yes. And I will give you a discount.
Discount? I don't intend to pay you, Master Pieman.
Baker.
Master Baker. Can we just say Baker?
Yeah. Baker.
I don't intend to pay you.
Oh, may I ask why that is? Because you seem to have a real lot of money.
I do. I have more wealth than anyone in the kingdom.
Is it not a principality?
I meant figuratively, yes. I have more money than everyone. Therefore, I don't have to pay you.
Explain that to me.
Well, see, the only reason I would have to pay you is because we had some kind of power equality, that we were equals, that if I didn't pay you, then you could exact some punishment or revenge, you see. If I just took the pie from you, you would demand something of equal value, either money or some even trade.
Yeah, that's the way I usually do it.
But see, here, there's no consequence for me taking the pie. There's nothing you can do. You are helpless. And so I'm giving you something of equal value.
What is that?
Your life. I'm letting you live, but I'm taking your pie.
Oh, but you see, the pies cost me money. Now, how will I make pies for others?
Well, what you should do is you should raise the prices for your poorest customers, because they're the most powerless and can do the least. And that way, it will offset your losses when I just take pies when I please.
Oh, I see. But see, this could backfire.
How is that, Baker?
Well, what if they can't pay? And what if I just spend all my time collecting money and not making pies? And then my spirit of joy and love is affected, and the pies are not as good.
Then I will force you to make more of them, and I will force others to make them for me. And if their quality decreases, I will increase my punishment and my anger until I have destroyed and killed all the subjects in my kingdom. So I know that you're going to find a way.
Oh, I guess I will.
So it's really up to you. You, O Baker, maker of pies, it is upon your shoulders that all of this rests. You are the only one who has,
morality?
Yeah.
Ethics?
Yeah, because everybody else, it doesn't matter. Ethics and morality are for the middleman like you. I don't use them. They're no good to the poor because they have no access to justice. Thank you for keeping things unequal, pie maker. The prince is leaving.
Goodbye, prince. Thank you for taking my pie and leaving me with a moral and ethical dilemma.
The prince leaves, goes back to his castle. What a jerk, what a jerk.
What a jerk, what a jerk. I know. I will teach everyone in the kingdom how to make wonderful pies for themselves. I shouldn't be the only one anyway. Everyone should be able to make these pies. We'll all become pie makers. Even the prince. Especially the prince. We'll all make pies.
Thank you for tuning in to this play. This is a modern-day Monkey Music production. Monkey Music has a very long history. Hello, friends. What was that? Oh, my goodness. Well, that was a very ancient form of,
What is it? I'm trying to think of what the original name is. Sarugaku or something like that. But originally, no theater, the Japanese tradition of no theater, goes way back to like the 12th century and this thing called monkey music. And originally, no theater was called monkey music of discipline or something like that. Monkey music of skill, that's it. And what? I know. That's what I do. But it was kind of a folk tradition of mime and silly stories and comedy and all that kind of thing. And I know I've told the story of the fella, the actor entertaining a famous shogun or something by running around the fire going, "I'm warming my scrotum." And it killed. And that became one of the first of these performances. Where's your point? Well, why were my friends and I doing a weird folk play? Because we weren't really doing it in that tradition. We were making up our own tradition and doing a play for ourselves. And that is what I want to talk with you today is about taking back theater, taking back music, taking back all the visual arts. What do you mean taking back? Haven't you noticed that someone took them from us and is selling them back to us? Someone took our pie recipes, is making pies and selling them to us in a state of pie-making ignorance. And it happened very slowly, so that we were like, remember that play where the frog boils? Is that a play? I don't know. But anything can be a play. And so I can't do one. You can't do one because you don't do them. You can't write music because you don't write music. You can't paint paintings because you don't paint paintings. But if you did, you could. If you did, you would. And so that's what I'm saying today is, oh my goodness, I am going to lead my friends in to the peach grove of heaven. And we are going to steal back the sacred peaches that are rightly our own. I'm so glad that you would join me today. You know, this radio station, oh, don't you just say that during marathon? That is what I'm... I got that from public radio. This radio station, you get really close to the mic when you say it. But this one does have, as you know, a special mission. And it is very much an of the people sort of thing. It is not what we would call exclusive, necessarily. I mean, you know, none of the people on this radio make themselves exclusive. Some of it's done because they're social outcasts. But... you know, it's not by design. But one of the things that is an underlying belief is of the universality of all of this. The fact that music, theater, all the arts are not a priesthood. It isn't special. And you as a human come equipped to make things, to have ideas, and to create worlds. Why is that? Well, I happen to think because we live in a sort of meaningless existence, but only meaningless in the same way that an empty stage is meaningless or a canvas is meaningless. You know, meaning is really irrelevant. It's already perfect. But here we come and we get the sense that it's not. That's fine. But it's also a wonderful opportunity. Because upon this empty stage, we can make theater. And the best kind is the kind we make in groups. Now, there's a lot that's about organized religion, you know, the murdering and the guilt and everything and the psychological torture. But there's also great things, and that's sometimes the only opportunity people get to be in plays and things, because we like to act out our myths or just sometimes to entertain one another. To have a talent show, and that's the same sort of thing. I'm just saying it doesn't have to be impressive, but it's a wonderful type of theater when the audience and the players are all mixed up and they're all just taking turns. So we all get to be players and we all get to be audience. And I feel like that's how it should be. I'll tell you, though, when you see something that's good or of heaven, there are those who get jealous and want to own. They don't realize it's free, so they steal it.
do that. Well, I'm going to steal these peaches. Just ask. Go ask. I have a peach with you. See, it's not a solitary thing. You want to own something. Something that if you owned, if you were asking and everybody else had it, you could have endless access to it. But you want to secret it and hoard it. And then maybe sell it back. To those say, now I have the peaches, you must come through me. And it's heady and it gives you power. That's why I say, why are there so many boneheads and talentless people in the entertainment industry? Because they want the feeling. They want the feeling of giving out pies without knowing how to make them or understanding from where the joy comes. The origin of the light. Why do I always talk about food? Well, if you go looking, Anthony Bourdain is interesting to me because he was at heart a searcher and a poet and a person looking, trying to answer philosophical questions. He was immersed in food, immersed in food, just like what's her name and Tommy with the beans. No, but he was food industry and everything, and so that became a context in which he could think about his ideas about anthropology and think about his ideas about the human condition in the context of this thing that we have to do, which is eat, and this thing that we make a little more complicated and elaborate and pleasurable than it has to be. So what's that all about? And he used that to look at it and say, food is this commonality. At least we can start here. We may not even eat. We may have dietary restrictions, but let's say there's something we agree we can both eat, and we sit down to that bowl of blueberries together, and we say, tell me about your experience and that shared experience, especially if we've gathered the blueberries together. It becomes transcendent, and then we can relate to one another because you have some place to start. And I want to do that with you. Oh, my goodness. I've been on the radio a long time talking like this, and not many people do it because it's not... You wouldn't pay necessarily to hear. It's worthless. And I have tried to take up a worthless vocation on purpose. And the reason that is because I'm trying to show that everyone is a pie maker. And that has been a lifelong mission of mine. And you could say, it's so funny because they might call it guerrilla art or something, guerrilla, or, you know, as if it's we're little warriors or we're revolutionaries crawling through the woods, disguised as Comedy dell'arte characters? I don't know. It'd be wonderful. Look at me, Scaramouche with an ammo belt. And on my ammo belt, harmonicas like Blues Traveler. Because that's where I'm coming from. Oh, my goodness. It's a bandolero of unexpected stuff. I'd get a bandolero and you don't be in there, Claire's. If they're the right shape, harmonica-shaped eclairs, slightly frozen so they don't melt when I'm on stage, then just the right stage of thaw. And I know I'm going to probably get cramps. Those kind of sugary, kind of creamy things make my gut do stuff. But oh, my goodness. They're wonderful. And everybody can find some sort of treat that they could get down and keep down, maybe. I just... saw an ad for a vape that didn't have anything in it. And it said, there's nothing in it. There's no weed. There's no tobacco or no, you know, nicotine. It's just flavored air. And I thought, I didn't think that was bad necessarily, but I don't know that I have to buy flavored air because I could go smell a rose or I could carry a strawberry in my pocket and just shove it up in my face every once in a while. So as I do, I have a potpourri in my pocket that I've made. You can make your own sachet. You don't have to buy commercial sachets. You can make them out of anything. They can be even like made out of like Havdalah spices. You know,
That's a lot of huff. Do you realize that? The end of Shabbat, you huff allspice. And so that's the same sort of thing, I believe. Oh, my goodness. Come up. We're one of those congregations where people take turns getting up and saying nonsense. I love it. And you should have to sit there. It's just like, why not have religion be like open mic night? You don't need a preacher necessarily. Somebody is going to be good, maybe, right? You got 10 acts. Somebody's got the mic. One of the people getting up there is going to be, oh, wonderful. But I like a talent show, too, because you can win a talent show without the most skill if you're the most entertaining. And that is at any, you know, and it doesn't mean that you're going to be, it's frustrating to people trying to make a career out of things and somebody goes up and they do the right thing for that moment. You're getting all the laughs, and I've spent a lot of time on my act, which has violins and a trampoline and all that, and I've had to memorize Greek, and you come out of here and you're just silly and you're getting off the laughs because that person might have understood the audience better than you. Maybe they were his friends or family. And yes, that does go a long way. That's fine. I think if you've ever been, this is the interesting thing that will be both disappointing and then enlightening and then a wonderful gift. Let's say you're in a band when you're young and you're playing bars and you're playing for your friends and your friends think you're great and they're having this, and you go, I'm an amazing band because I am playing these shows. My friends are going nuts. We're having a great time. It feels great. They keep saying, I remember that awesome show. And then you go out of town like Jesus did, and then nobody gets it. And you go, well, do I suck? And then you think, maybe I'm only good for my friends. And then you think, I'm good for my friends. And it does matter, right? You know, it'd be like at a family picnic. You say, well, nobody's funny at the family picnic, so we've had to hire somebody to come in, be jokey. That's not a career. Who even wants that as a career?
Yeah, I go around to picnics. And I spread joy where people and people's family don't who are unimaginative.
My goodness, wouldn't it be easier just to teach everybody? Only comedians say, everybody's a comedian. Yeah, so sorry. It's good and it's bad. You know, because the thing is that if your powers do work on your cousins, there's no reason that, why would you think I'd pay you money? That's the wonderful thing about home cooking and all. So I'm not saying that you have to be the best. I'm saying that, you know, find the people that you can please and please them with your grilled cheese. Find the family that likes your pies. Find the one that likes bread. Bread is good. Now, so, well, not all people can eat all these things. Pie, you can't hear it, but it's in quotes. You know, I might not literally mean that. Just anything like that that you could eat that would be made with care and time. And that's the thing. You know, the goose that pooed pie. Everybody grew up with that story. There's a goose that poops out pies and nobody wants to eat them. Well, there's a couple things going on there. One is where it's coming from, a goose's vent. The other thing, though, is that there's no time going into it. They're just going, and the ingredient really is that it isn't something that can be made immediately. That's what makes it special. So, if an eclipse happened every day, it would just be the sunrise. So it's the specialness that makes it special, or rarity that makes it special, or it's something. Oh, my friends, and so here I give you my donuts, my donut recipe, my reason for making donuts, and then I ask you if you've made any. And then we can share that experience.
Oh, I'm glad I tuned into you today, Hardy. I'm glad you're saying these things. I'm glad that you are sharing with me my inheritance as a human being because someone is trying to deprive me of it. Oh, it's just like our ancestors died and we've got some duplicitous cousins who got to the house first and they took all the good stuff in their greed, even the items that they don't even know what to do with. What are you going to do with Papa? Bass clarinet, you don't even play it. You could have provided joy, and all you've done is deprive someone of happiness. And so the power that we have when we take our inheritance together and you say, like, I'm going to call her opera, Oprah. Everybody gets, look under your seat. Everybody gets a bass clarinet, but not literally. Everybody gets a pie, not literally. Your pie. And I think that's wonderful. So we're trying to give it back. Take it back. Make art. But now at the same time, sometimes you say, your band probably sucks. It does. That's what I'm saying. You know, don't get greedy. Don't be ambitious. If you are able to access the peaches of heaven, your next thought shouldn't be, how can I sell these? Your next thought should be making a map so people can find where the peaches are. And then the peaches become both the most wonderful thing and worthless at the same time. Oh, flood it with joy. Flood the market with joy. So free, I've talked about, you know, the negative connotations of free. I mean, it is really a trigger word now. If you see free means worthless. Seen that? And free also feels like bait. You know, hey, free bag of chips if you come in. You know, oh, what happens then? Nothing. Just take the chips. Come on in. And you say, oh, that can't be right. Because you don't get anything for free. Well, not that way, but there's lots of free things. And ideas are one. They're like recipes. If you get the recipe, you don't need to have. You can find the flour and the fruit on your own. Oh, my friend, I'm not just giving you a recipe. I'm telling you there's a world of recipes and that's the key. And I believe you. Continue your search for enlightenment. You got to be doing something. But also, if you'd like a nice hack for your emotions, if you'd like a what they call a life hack or some, you know, nice shortcut to contentment and to feeling good and satisfaction and sense of purpose, it would be doing this together. Oh, my friends. And like I said, do it. Start with your friends. And that's the way you do it. Start with your friends. You get an idea for an act or a piece of art, do it for an individual. Do it for a couple of individuals. And then teach them how to do it. I believe in that way more than anything. And it's not even subversive because there's no threat to the giant machine that sells us back our dreams. There's no threat to it. It is so confident and established. You just can't make Dune 2. But you see, neither can Denis Villeneuve or Timothy Talcott or Indira. They have to do it as a group. Now you say, oh, then they need money. But then Dune is a wonderful thing. And I don't know that you could do a community production of it, necessarily. But I will tell you this, that the feeling that you get from Dune is recreatable with pie or anything else. And I love spectacle. And I love human beings coming together and the oppressed and the oppressor working together to make a monument to the oppressor. And it's impressive. So I am all for impressive oppression, and I love skyscrapers. But I do realize that in my finite, little, fragile life, that ultimately I have needs not meant by giant statues of great people. I have needs not meant by these man-made mountains. I have things that may only be satisfied by my fellow, you, by my neighbor, you, by my sibling, you. Oh, my goodness. Have you ever, there's a, I don't know, you probably don't have to be high to do this, but, you know, look at pictures of your ancestors and or descendants and try to mess them up in your head and say, oh, my daughter is my grandmother, and my grandfather is my son or me, and just try to make them ageless, or think about meeting them in heaven, and they're all 21, or they're all some age they never were, and it feels different, and it feels strange. And oh my goodness, it's the key. I only have a little time on this stage, but I am on a stage, therefore I must be an actor in a play. And by extension, I must also not be anyone at all, or anyone. But, my goodness, so what? Look at the endless possibilities. We could create something together. And if we have the same fears, and if we have the same needs, wouldn't it make sense that we could make something we both need together? But we'd have to put aside things. We'd have to put aside ancient demons that call to us. We'd have to put aside the ghosts of the princes and the kings and those that call to us from the past and say, you are nothing and we are everything. You need to be guided by our strong whip. You need to be at the feet of our horses. And I would say, shush, you need to all be quiet for a minute, or else I'm going to pull you off your horse, take off your armor, and drag you into the future, and I'm going to put you in a janitor's uniform, and you're going to scrub some toilets, and I'll show you the world you made, because we could all be scrubbing our own toilet, and there wouldn't be any toilet scrubbers, because the toilet scrubbers and the pie makers would be the same person who washed their hands between the tasks, of course, or there's gloves or something. My goodness. You know, not all these little problems are overcomable. And I hope that you now, inspired by or angered by my example of a homemade play. Now, why was it so stylized? Because if you're reinventing something, why not completely reinvent it? If it's an experiment, it might go wrong. Of course it is. But, you know, this idea of just, I reinvented the car by adding ears on it. It doesn't really, not reinventing it at all, or tacking stuff on like a Mr. Potato Head. I'm saying rethink. Go back, see what's interesting, you know? And if as I said, the stakes are low. If there's no merely greedy people involved, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And sometimes it's exciting when you set out, especially in theater, to make someone happy and you make them inexplicably angered or bored. It's a discovery. It's a wonderful thing. It's like getting a new ingredient for a pie and saying, I wonder if this is a pie filling. And then you just, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. There is an idiom no one ever gets correct.
But that's what it means. And what does that mean? The proof of the pudding is it, if it's whether it's good or not, you can determine immediately on your first spoonful. Does it taste nasty? Does it taste like kerosene? Is it really durian fruit that you've, you know, custard that you've exchanged for this thing that should be pudding? Does it taste like Aunt Bee's pickles? Or is it delicious? If it's delicious, then yes, your recipe is probably good. The milk was probably okay. Stuff like that. Proof of the pudding is in the tasting. Now, the expression, proof is in the pudding, it could be. It's I found out that the governor was sleeping with a mermaid, and I took pictures on microfilm, and I rolled it up after it was developed. I rolled up the negatives, and I put it in pudding. So that's where it is. So if you want to know, if you wanted the, it's in that. Good job, pudding spy. I might have put it in Jell-O, now that I'm thinking, which is stupid because you'll be able to see it. Oh, I really messed up. I think it's in a Jell-O cube and you can totally look in it and see it. I hope somebody thinks it's a grape. My great-grandmother cooked food. Every meal. She was born in the 1880s or 90s or something. And I remember her mainly in the 60s and early 70s when she cooked. And she was not I don't remember her being a good cook. But it doesn't matter. She made food. And she made food that was sort of the times, of the recipes they give you, you know, and was not very imaginative and curious. And so she just made the recipes that they told you to make in the magazines that they told you to read. And so one of them were these, and I don't know which came first, the people who made Jell-O molds, who made those kind of copper Jell-O molds that you hung on the wall, or the Jell-O or the brand or gelatin people, or who knows, you know. It probably goes way back to the early days of advertising. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that Edward Bernays invented the Jell-O mold. And so everybody made these, and there's different things that you can put in them. And one of the most interesting things you can do, and you've probably seen this, is that, you know, you get the, say, the lime Jell-O, and you put, a lot of times you'll see fruit, but also vegetables. Now, my great-grandmother was big on the vegetables, so it was either lime or lemon Jell-O with carrots, even radishes. Now, the mouthfeel of Jell-O alone is odd. And you think, is this gelatinous subject, is this fat? Am I eating whale fat? Am I scooping up whale fat and eating it? But this is not fishy. And it's kind of like, I'm not, but then, so you have that, and then you crunch on something, and it's context. Because, you know, you cut a nice crunchy vegetable, when you're expecting it, is a wonderful thing. But when you're not even sure what's in your mouth, and then it changes like that, the texture is different. And this thing that you thought maybe even was just thick liquid is now clearly not. Oh, it's a solid with a crunch. Crunch like what? Like a bug's exoskeleton? See, I don't know. I'm just biting down. And then experience is happening. Oh, my goodness. So it's like mouth theater. But the worst kind, you know, because it'd be okay if we all kind of contributed. So that's the thing, I don't know what I'm eating. But if we all kind of knew, and so I like new experiences, I think we're just, you know, used to counting really unpleasant, unnecessarily unexpected experiences as just wonderful surprises. But they're probably by and large unnecessary, and that we could explore without the violent and disappointing, nauseating surprises that come with, like, biting down on mystery food.
If we're all in the kitchen, you see how it's made. Come on and step in and see how it's made. Look, oh my, it shouldn't be disillusioning.
Don't be Eddie Munster seeing your hero Zombo for the first time without the makeup, and it's Louie Nye. So you go nuts, nuts, nuts.
Poor Eddie. Clearly had some kind of behavioral problems where I don't even know. Oh, poor dear heart. Seemed like really troubled. I don't know what was going on there. And then he saw, you don't even know what I'm talking about. When I was a young person, when I was a very small child, there's a television show on called The Munsters with a U, not Monsters, but Munsters. And they're just a family, but then they were, each one of them was a different sort of cinematic monster character. And you're like, Godzilla? If only. No. So Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Bride of Dracula, which I don't know, is the Hollywood 1950s or something, or 40s. And then Wolfman, I don't know where that's from. Again, Lon Chaney. I'm sure it goes way back. Oh, the tradition of Wolfman goes way back. I'm sure it does. Or there wouldn't be the surname Wolfman. But they were living as a family. And as unlikely as it is. And then one of their, the daughter was an inner monster. She was like a psychopath or something. Or I don't know. But it wasn't clear. But you couldn't tell. Well, that's the worst. The worst ones are that you can't. You know, like with Herman, you go, Frankenstein's monster, flat head, bolts in the neck. But Marilyn, just like the state by the same name. You can't just tell. You can't tell what's going on in there just by looking at it. There's a lot more. So that's the family. Now, on this show one time, the young boy who is, his name is Eddie Munster. And I don't know if it's a play on Eddie Money or something, but I don't think he'd been born yet. But he was born. He just wasn't in show business. And it was Eddie Mahoney anyway, so I don't even know. So Eddie Munster likes a television show that has as like a spooky monster character named Zombo, who likes that, has the spooky Bela Lugosi voice. And Eddie wins something, and gets to go behind the scenes and see Zombo being filmed, and I think two or three camera thing? I don't even know. I can't remember. It might have been just a one. I mean, it might have been a local, really unsophisticated one camera thing. Do not know. I don't remember that part. But he sees Zombo as played incredibly movingly, expertly by Louie Nye. He sees him take off his makeup or put on his makeup and transform from ordinary Louie Nye to Zombo, who now has a dental prosthesis so he can't speak properly. You know, put the fangs in and everything. And Eddie is crushed. You know, he's seen how sausages and laws are made now, and he's disenchanted, but it's beyond that. He's psychologically damaged. He's angry. He's resentful and bitter for being deluded like this. He realizes his whole world is a lie. It's a lie. There's no Zombo. Right? There's no mom, only Zool. So I don't know what's, you know, that's not what we want for our children. And I think that's what makes those folks monsters. Is they are really very set on appearances. And yet they're hypocrites because they want people to see beyond their own appearance. Go figure. So a lot of those things are. And I remember years later, you know, thinking, you know, that guy who played the burglar on that Munsters episode was Gavin McLeod from Love Boat. What? Well, you see, or I saw Car 54 and go, that's not, his head's not flat.
So, but we all learn to get over that kind of disenchantment and say, oh, I get it. It's all a, not a charade. I don't know what it is. It's a carafe, but it isn't real, and it's pretend. And we feel dupes, but you have that power. All those powers are your powers, too. You have the powers of appreciating light. You know, you look at a painting, and let's say it's a beautiful painting of a landscape. You say, look at the light, the way the light hits that mountain. The painting is a recipe for how to look at a real mountain. It's basically like those videos that say, look at this crazy thing. And then there's a red circle around where you're supposed to look and go, oh, that's where the ghost's face is, because you might have missed it. Well, that's what art is. It sometimes points out things to you. When you see this, this is how to look at it. If you look at it this way, you will feel joy. So then, you know, it's a recipe for how to recreate what the eyes of or ears of the artist experienced. If you want that view of the water to be transcendent, if you want to feel moved to tears, if you want a numinous experience, if you want joy immeasurable, look at this diagram I made you about where the parts are that will give you that feeling. And that's wonderful. And we can all do that as a record of our experience. I saw this thing. How did it make you feel? Like this. Let me try to express it to you. Well, the more used to you getting expressing those things, the better you'll get at it. The more artistically articulate you will become, and you will be able emotionally articulate. Let's put it that way, and you'll be able to describe how to get there. You'll be able to make maps. You'll be able to make inner maps, psychological maps of where the beauty is, of where the joy is, and we can make those for each other. And you can buy them. I don't want to buy them. I don't want to buy them when we can make them for each other. It's ridiculous. You know, you learn that when you go, the best way to be, there's nothing more sort of enlightening than being poor and wanting to do some kind of project and realize that you probably can do it just by adding cooperative people power. You know, make things happen. Get together. I can't afford a Broadway play. You know? But we can all entertain one another. It's not going to be like Broadway. It will if we agree. See, the difference is the relationship you have with the person that you're seeing, or the artist and everything too. And a bunch of strangers does not have the effect on me than my friends do. So that's add 100 points just that I know you. So your art's going to be more effective. So I go see my friend's band play. I'm going to think it's great. You? Maybe not so much. You might not think it's great. You don't know them. You know, that's a weird thing, right? And I know that friends who have been, maybe professions where they're adjacent to professional people, or they might meet actors, or they might meet musicians or something. And then all of a sudden, let's say you didn't like a band. You go, man, I hate the Baloney Brothers. I could have done better. But I say, oh, man, Baloney Brothers is real cheesy derivative. Yeah, I know. Oh, God, the one guy, he's got the affected voice. Or no, ah, I burned a guy to bake. Like that, we make fun of the Baloney Brothers. Then you meet Johnny Baloney. And he's a freaking prince. He is a lovely, sainted human. And I bet you anything. You might not love that music because it's still in there that you didn't like it, but it's going to hit differently. That's why a lot of times I'll hear people go, oh, do you like this band? I'll go, man, that sounds like a friend's band. Meaning that if I knew them, I'd like it. But there's just so much I can't, you know, get over. Because it really is the difference between restaurant food and home cooking. And I'm going to choose the home cooking all the time. It's just too much salt in commercial pop music.
Too much salt, too much fat, too many additives. And I'm telling you that a lot of the emotions, a lot of the feelings that you get from things that are very expensive, I'm going to give you some life hacks and you can get them for free. Now, sometimes spending the money helps you. I call this the paying to see stand-up phenomenon. Because if you pay to see a stand-up comic, you will laugh more than if you see the same stand-up comic at an open mic. I guarantee, because you feel stupid for paying for, you know, so you're going, I'm here to laugh, I'm going to laugh. So this person's weak material is not going to stop me, because I got my friend out, I'm on a little date here, and we're going to laugh our butts off. Whatever you say, as long as it's not, like, you know, hurtful, because, you know, I want that. When I go to an open mic, I cross my arms and go, go, make me laugh. Terrible audience. I don't do that. I kind of do that. The best way to make me laugh is make me profoundly uncomfortable, and I will probably laugh. So don't do that, though. That's cheating. Am I cheating? I don't think so. You know, it's a really interesting thing, isn't it, to have somebody just speaking like this. It's kind of what they call old school. When before they, you know, I don't know why radio was so different back in the day, because more people were listening to it. And yet it just, there was often it was less slick than it is now, and nobody does. So this I do not get. So I enjoy that WFMU understands that one of the real appeals of radio is a certain chaos, is a certain immediacy, is a certain, nonsense. That it isn't well thought out necessarily. It isn't trying to make you do anything. And, you know, I guess it's to sell records, but that got more and more cynical as things went on, did it? Oh, my goodness. Let's say this isn't free. That's how I'll do it. Let's say there's a, you got to pay a lot of money to have the things I just said to you. Well, maybe you do. I don't know how much you've donated. You might donate a whole ton of money to the station, and you really have paid very dearly to hear Hardy White. That's who I am. Did I say my name? Did I not say it earlier? I might not have. I'm Hardy White, and I'm absolutely nobody. And that's not saying that in a self-deprecating way. I'm saying I represent nobody, and I'm not part of anything. And the only thing I'm part of is an extended friend group that you are probably part of, and an extended community with whom I share certain values. They don't have to be all values. They don't even have to be consistent with when it comes to food or basic things. I understand how this works, and I love that everyone's different. But I will say, if I have one prejudice, it's towards joy and away from pain. And you may philosophically differ with that and say, I prefer pain and not joy. That's great. We agree to disagree. And also get away from me. But that's where I'm coming from, and I know you might be too. Oh, my goodness. I hope that I've given you something to think about, but more importantly, I hope that I've literally made a pie. And that with that, pinned to it, is the recipe. And all it requires are your ingredients tailored to your needs and your desires. And I want to help you get that. And you can help me get that. Isn't that fun? I'll work on your play, you work on mine. That's how we do it. I bet if you've ever been in a small artistic community, that's exactly how it works anyway. You know, sometimes you can't pay people, and you pay them by working on their projects. And then they work on yours. And so, well, whoever sees these amateur projects, we see them, that's what we do. That's where we go instead of galas. That's where people say, what are these people, these creative types who just work a little dispiriting job? What do they even do? They go to our equivalent of galas, which is that we do things. We make things, and we have events, and we
We cooperate so that we can enable each other's self-expression. I think that's a great thing. I just don't want to outsource that. I want to do it myself. I love it, and I will always eat other people's cooking, but you got to be a cook. You also got to be a cook. And despite what the Adult Swim interstitial that aired about the same time as mine says, you can't have too many cooks. Everybody a cook. Besides, that it contradicts itself because they did that thing. They became more absurd and brutal and chaotic, and as it did, it approached reality. So, which is it? Oh, my friends, I really enjoy being with you like this, because I can't see you roll your eyes or anything. Weirdly, I can hear it. But I try to ignore it because, oh my goodness, there's so many opportunities that the universe will have to make me feel bad about myself. And so I am going to refuse to cooperate and just remain steadfastly oblivious to some of the things that I'm sure some people are thinking, because I do believe that I have displayed my flaws and inadequacies today, and as always, I believe that I have put forth and put on display all of my weaknesses and all the things that keep me from being polished or perfect, so-called. You know. But I love it. And that, to me, is the real type of theater, you know. Reality TV or reality? Reality TV is just a poisonous way of seeing reality. It's a way of poisoning your relationships, too. I really believe that. You know, it was a misnomer. It's still a misnomer. And it's reality's better. Oh my goodness. We have our own we're all our own roommates. I'm so glad that you joined me today. I can't even tell you. And I want you to have a great week, and probably don't turn the dial. Break it off. Break the knob off. If you don't want to do that, to just have, you know, break it off and then have more than one radio in the car. You could do that. You should have a separate, I don't know if we ever did that, but does FMU ever had just a radio that's just tuned just to that radio station? I guess it'd just be for people that are local. But like you can't, it's a radio with no dials. You just turn it on and it's WFMU, and you turn it off and it isn't WFMU. I know they made those. They must have. Just one frequency radios? Could we get on that? Is that something that...
Yeah, we did that before you were here, 1924 or something, back when Ken started.
I go, oh, I didn't know. I don't know a lot of the institutional memory I don't have, because I'm a recent addition. I'm here, you know, in WFSU's, hopefully middle age, could be at senescence. Who knows what the future will bring? Certainly isn't its beginning. It had that. It went through its infancy. And now it's now young. There's more young people. That's a weird. That's how you know you're. There's a lot of young people around now. Oh my goodness. What is that? Which one am I? But I love it. I like being an old. I'm your olds dealer, and I'm here to give out free cars. So-called. Oh, I love you so much. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online worldwide at WFMU.org. Oh, my friends, thank you for listening. Mahogany up next.
And you're going to enjoy that. And I would like to thank you again for tuning in. Bless you. Have a blessed week. Wow, 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 wow